It's a celebratory day today on the Rebel Room. Not because UNLV beat BYU 92-90. We're only here to talk about what happened, but because we've been so overwhelmingly positive about Noah Robotham on this podcast, and he is the hero coming out of Saturday, hits a three at the conclusion of regulation to lead the Rebels to an upset win over the Cougars in the Neon Hoops Showcase. Mike, you were there at T-Mobile Arena. What were your big takeaways?
UNLV played really well in the first half, about as well as they can play offensively. They may have unlocked a few things if they're open to playing a more open style. They played without Shakur Justin. That changed some of what they were doing. And, I mean, they gave up the lead in the second half, but I'm not going to beat them up too badly about that. They blew a 17-point lead over the course of the final 20 minutes, but it's basketball. You know, that happens. The final shot, just a great shot. I mean, really not much you could say about it. The play was going nowhere. Robotham just got the ball, put it up, and put it in. And that's really all you can say about it. It was a great shot from a player who really needed that maybe more than anyone else. And the team really needs him. So maybe something to spring him forward now that it looks like his slump is over. He's had two good shooting games in a row, including, you know, the biggest shot of the year. So those are the big takeaways. Maybe this will kickstart Robotham because they really need him. That's probably the biggest thing coming out of this.
Right, and I guess we shouldn't say all celebratory because also kind of looking for answers, as you mentioned, playing without Shakur Justin and his injury. Where do we stand on that? What do we need to look for on that front?
It's a situation where he injured his knee at Illinois, and from what Marvin Menzies said in the post game, he's sort of in that in-between range where he could probably maybe try and rehab it without surgery, and you might make it back by the end of the year, or you could have surgery and your season is done. And the question is, if we don't know what the injury is, but if it's a knee injury that's, you know, possibly require surgery or even thinking about it, leads me to believe, you know, what's the earliest he's going to come back from that? You know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that. That puts you right at the beginning of March. Season's almost over. You're going to rehab and work your way back to play, you know, two games in your senior year, or do you get the surgery, sit out the rest of this season? Because of the NCAA rules, Shakur Justin would be able to get a medical red shirt and come back for one more year as a fifth-year senior next year.
No question on that. He'd get it for sure.
Yeah, the rules are if you play in fewer than 30% of your team's games and your only appearances come in the first half of the season, then you're eligible for a medical red shirt. And he qualifies for both of those. If he had played one more game, he would have been ineligible, but he got injured right in that final game.
So for me, that creates an interesting little quandary, right? Because he'd obviously be on scholarship next year, and you're already kind of crunched with your numbers, and you're still out recruiting, trying to make the team better. It's a good thing. I mean, he's your best player, but I don't know. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Am I
asking a bad question? Well, no, am I wording it the wrong way?
No, there will be a roster crunch just because they are. If Shakur Justin were to come back next year as a redshirt, they are full on scholarships right now. They are already projected at 13 next year. But that really hasn't stopped you. I mean, they were at 13 this year, and they got Noah Robotham to pay his own way and play as a walk-on. So it hasn't really stopped them before. It would be a little bit different with Justin because I don't know if there's, like, an obvious candidate to, then you're talking about do you have to nudge someone out of the program, which, to Menzies' credit.
Georges.
I mean, he's the first guy that you would mention. But
he hasn't played yet this year.
Yeah, he's barely played ever.
Has he dressed this year?
He might have dressed, but he hasn't played. He hasn't come close to playing. But Menzies has not nudged anyone. He hasn't forced anyone out of the program that I know of. I think they've had a couple transfers, but I think they've been of their own volition. It hasn't been like a roster situation where, you know, they've kicked anyone out so they could recruit a better player. If Justin wants to come back for another year and that's the decision they arrive at, you may see a situation where that has to happen. So, yeah, it is a question. That's one of the big questions. If the Justin thing does come to pass and he gets the red shirt, that's the logical next question as well. Who's leaving?
Yeah, and you're already over because you're out there still recruiting.
Yeah, they've got two guys signed. They had two openings. They signed two guys who are signed, so that's official. And they're at 13. So, I mean, they're playing with 14 this year if you count Rebotham. So, yeah, it's going to be a question of, you know, Ben Coupette. Does he come back? Does Menzies, you know, try to find him a better situation or another situation? Do they try and find a soft landing for Georgi Slavonchinin? Those are two players that you don't really need basketball-wise, but it sounds kind of callous to just, you know, cast them off because Houston has got another year of eligibility. But that's, you know, that's the business of college basketball.
Certainly. While I don't disagree or dispute anything, you guys said we are looking down the road. I think it's I think the words good thing were mentioned. I think that we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because what does this mean for this year? I mean, I got to think this is a big blow. It looks like, like you said, at best, if he decided to come back and play, it's probably only a couple games. It looks like strongly towards the other scenario that he's done for the year. And this was kind of what this UNLV team was built around. I got to think this cuts significantly into the ceiling going forward.
Yeah, he was the UNLV's supposed to be their best player. He's going to be their rock. That guy that can give you a double-double pretty much every night, losing a guy like that is going to hurt. It worked against BYU because UNLV played a little bit smaller for a lot of the first half. They shot 16 three-pointers in the first half. They made 9 of them. This team is not going to shoot like that every night. So, yeah, it's just it's going to be hard to cover a hole with Houston, even though he hasn't had the kind of year maybe that we were expecting of him. But he's still that dependable guy where he's going to give you the 30-plus minutes of, you know, strong defense. He's going to rebound. He's going to set screens. He does all that. Now it's you're plugging Jonathan Shamwa-Chachwa into that hole. That's a guy who's been playing basketball for about 5 minutes. He's athletic, and you can coach him up. But, I mean, he's not going to give you what Houston gave you every night.
But here's the deal. Big picture, which obviously I think we've been talking about essentially since they rolled out the ball this season – blessing in disguise, juice box is gone, gives you a chance to develop your bigs. If this season is in fact a development season, which we've long labeled it as, right? Disagree.
You didn't long label it as a development season.
Smarter people than me have long labeled it as a development season.
Okay. I just feel like your tune has done a complete 180. I've never would have heard you call this a developmental season when you were first on the podcast.
They lost we lost to Valpo at home. Valpo case. You're not making the tournament. Marymount and Valpo beat you without Bo Kimble. Did you get that reference?
Bo Kimble,
don't,
yeah.
Please say you got that.
Gotcha. Yeah. It just took me a second.
Okay. Heart stopping.
I was hoping for the Bryce Drew.
No.
If you're looking for a development, then yeah. I mean, more minutes for those guys helps, but I don't know if Marvin Menzies is necessarily looking for more development time this year. I think he's of a mind that he wants to start winning some games. So it's going to hurt you there. I mean, it's always a trade-off. Like, if Shamwa-Chachwa becomes a star and this is like gives him more time and he gets there quicker, and then that's all well and good. But if he can't play, if Dembele can't play, like if those guys aren't any good, then you're just stuck and you've got, you know, you're trying to patch a huge hole that Shakur Justin could fill, but he's, you know, he's injured. Yeah. So.
Well, if you find out those guys can't play, then you find landing spots for everybody. Right? Well, call William Jesuit University and say, I got two big guys coming.
Well, theoretically, but my pause would be that Menzies hasn't done that yet. He's been here for 3 years, and they've had guys that they've had opportunities to recruit over Georgi Slavonchinin. Like, I would bet my life that if Marvin Menzies wanted to give a scholarship to someone, he could bring in a better player right now than Georgi Slavonchinin.
Yeah, there's three of us in this room. Yeah,
and they could bring him in midseason right now. But on personal principle, he wants to.
And I love Menzies.
He doesn't want to kick anyone out.
Great guy, Marvin Menzies. I think the thing that's going to change for him here, Kamala, is he's got to win next year. He has to win. So none of this, okay, Kropet, you're my guy. I hope you get the degree. Georges, you're the guy. He's got to get Jimmy's and Joe's. It could go. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. If it were up to me, I would have no problem yanking. I'd yank scholarships left and right if we could get better players.
Miss three free throws down the stretch, you're done.
But that's not the way they operate.
I understand. It's why I'm not a basketball coach.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot to put like a coach into, and you know, to yank a scholarship from a kid and just because you got a better player. But if Houston comes back, yeah, they may have to be. You would wager that they would have to do that. Like, that's, it's no question. Like, you've got to get rid of someone. So, yeah, that's where they are.
Okay, so in this developmental year now, we're just writing off the rest of the season. Doesn't matter anymore. Sounds about your...
Noah Robotham hit one of the best, like, most exciting shots that, like, we can remember in, like, the last 5 years or so.
Against the opponent of dislike.
Yeah, and we talked about it for about 5 seconds before we got on to, like, next year and big picture stuff. It's like,
well, that's how we're all... Even, like, after the World Series ends, the Red Sox are, like, running out to the mound. David Price is validated, right? And they're already like, eh, Red Sox luxury cap. Well, how's it going to look next year? We're always talking about how things are going to look and feel. We're never going to be in the moment.
The World Series, I feel like I didn't hear the luxury tax stuff for weeks later.
I'm just saying, it was an example, all right?
Weeks. Well, this is like not, this is days, and like Mike said, we talked about it for 2 minutes. I don't know. I just think there's some harm. Maybe we're, with your rant, maybe we're overreacting to the Valpo and Loyola losses. I still think UNLV had a chance. I'm not saying they were, but I think they had a chance to be like a top 4 or 5 team in the Mountain West, be competitive, maybe get some excitement back. I feel like the chances of that are cut into significantly without your best player, and I don't gloss over that as easily as you do. Maybe I'm wrong.
Is I mean,
like, doesn't this set them back a few notches?
Juice Box is your best player going into the season. The man shot the ball 3 times against Cincinnati, right?
He has not played like their best player.
Maybe, again, blessing in disguise. Maybe he grad transfers out and we don't even have the problem.
I would want Shakur Justin back next year. If I would not want him to grad transfer. If you could get him back for another year, I would, because I feel like the biggest part of his problem this year was just that role that he's just not the go-to guy. He doesn't want to have that burden on him, and he doesn't want to force his offense. He doesn't want to force his game and take over and dictate things. But next year, if this developmental year goes as well as they expect it to, and if everything goes as planned, he won't have to be the go-to guy
next
year.
Who's going to be the
Bryce Hamilton will be your go-to guy.
Bryce Hamilton should play 42 minutes a game.
Yeah, Bryce Hamilton is, I mean, that's a guy that is a 4-star shooting guard who has already shown you flashes of great offense.
He should play every minute. He should take some of every Juice Box's fouls, and he should have 7 fouls.
I agree. If he's playing behind Chris Clyburn now, I'd like to see Bryce Hamilton get more minutes if you're expecting him to be your leading scorer next year. But yeah, Bryce Hamilton, Joel Tomboy, and Mbaka Zhang. Like, these are guys who, if they continue to take steps forward, they can be your leaders next year in terms of on the court. And Justin can go back to being that fill-in-the-cracks kind of guy that where he was so effective last year, where he's just, you know, getting in, he's getting putbacks. He's waiting until he's single-teamed, and he's scoring easy baskets.
Yeah, JoJo drove the Cadillac, and Morin was, you know, I mean, JoJo drove the Cadillac, and Juice Box was the secondary thing. Now there's nobody to drive the Cadillac.
I think last year, even I would say McCoy and Mooring were both probably had higher usage rates than Juicen. So he was probably third on the pecking order behind those two guys. And he excelled in that role just when the opportunities were there. He's so good at cashing in. If you put him in a role like he can't do that this year because they don't have anyone, they don't have the one number one and number two guy. If they get a number one next year, a legit, you know, Bryce Hamilton evolves and he's scoring 18 a game, then that makes life easier for Justin. Then that's the version of Justin that you want back. So,
and then Hardy would be the point guard?
Yeah. And that's a guy. He slipped my mind. I didn't mention it. But he's another guy who's projected to be who could turn into a pretty good player. He's having kind of a breakout this year. So maybe Justin doesn't have to be your go-to guy next year. And Shakur Justin as the number three guy on the scouting report, that's a player that I want. So I would not be averse to him coming back.
Yeah, you definitely – absolutely, 100%. I think we're all in agreement with that. You want him back. I think Brewer's just throwing out the grad transfer as a hypothetical. I don't think that was his actual desire. So some things looking up long-term, perhaps. But in the meantime, we do have an entire conference season to get through. And one last foray into the non-conference before that, UNLV headed to Hawaii this weekend. What do we expect from them there? What are the things to watch going into this a tournament of some sort, I believe?
Yeah, it's 8 teams. Each team plays 3 games. 2 wins would be great. UNLV opens up with Hawaii in the opening round, and then they If UNLV beats Hawaii, they'll play the winner of Indiana State and Colorado. So two teams are, you know, not, you know, Final Four contenders, but, you know, okay competition. And then if UNLV wins that second game, they get to the final round. You can get a team. You can get a TCU. You can get Rhode Island. Those are teams with, you know, tournament aspirations. So if you win a couple games, you get to the championship, then you get to play another good opponent. Maybe the best of, one of the best opponents you'll have a chance to play all year. So that's what we're looking at. If you lose to Hawaii on that first day, you can just write it off. Like, that's going to be a waste of a trip. So kind of a lot riding on that Saturday morning game.
So Saturday versus Hawaii should be a good one. Then they start, once they come back from Hawaii, starting Wednesday, January 2nd, will be the beginning of Mountain West Conference play. We cover it all, Brewer. Anything else you want to touch on before we move past basketball for a brief moment?
Yeah, I spoke my piece. Right. Big shot Noah came through. Big shot Noah, just like when he was a G.
So do you have no expectations? Are you not going to be disappointed no matter what happens in conference play now that you've deemed this the full developmental year?
I mean, come on, bro. I was at the Marymount game. Did I text both of you after the Marymount game? During the Marymount game?
Mm-hmm.
Then you were right back on board when they won three straight, and don't tell me you weren't. You were also texting me. You're acting like after one game you had written off the season, which is just patently false. You were back on board when they won the next four. Don't tell me differently. You're telling me what they're going to do to Mick Cronin.
Have you ever heard of this thing called reverse psychology?
That's what you were doing.
Case. If there's a ball that's bouncing and the Rebels of UNLV are playing, of course I want them to win. Come on. Right? I'm a local.
It wasn't a question of want. You were back on board.
I mean, you can't have expectations right now. They're developing.
Okay, well, that was all I wanted. We got off on it, but I just wanted to know what your expectations were for the conferences.
I would like for them to not lose by 40 to Reno, to beat Reno at home.
Can they go over 500 in Mountain West play? 18 games. Can they win 10 of them?
Give me the history the last 5 years. What have they done in Mountain West play? Top of your head.
They finished 8-10 last year, and they lost their last five. And they finished last the year before that in Menzies' first year.
So, as much as I am a name on the front of the jersey guy, Grimala.
Means nothing in this case.
I'm not talking to you.
0%. Grimala's going to agree with me. Grimala will agree with me on this point.
Did I say Kiefer? I'm talking to Grimala.
Grimala's too.
What's the point? Like, too many banners. Let me hear the argument first.
I can't even finish. I've forgotten now. I've been cut off. Rudely interrupted. All I'm saying, as much as I am a man on the front of the jersey guy, it ain't happening right now. This is the Mount West right now is as bad as it's been in the history of the 20 years of the league, right? And UNLV is as mediocre to below mediocre, and that's just the truth. But you know what is also true, Case?
That in itself proves that the name on the jersey thing means nothing.
Do you know what else is true, Case? Now yes. I'm talking to you.
Yes.
The tournament is still here at the MAC, which means nothing. But at least it's an easy commute for us, and they're three wins away from playing in the playing game in Dayton.
Four, maybe, depending on.
Four-ish.
Yeah.
Four wins away.
Yeah, see, but something like that, I think it's not even crazy. If they had developed throughout this year with Justin, I think you could convince me, like, they could get hot and win the tournament. It's a much harder sell for me now with a guy that was, I thought, was your best player.
He came into the year, he was going to be our best player, right? But he's not an alpha dog.
This is basketball. Things change. How much are we going to overreact to two losses? He played less than 30% of the games.
CK.
There's a lot that can happen. He can grow into that role.
He shot the ball three times.
Yeah, that's going to be his career low. That was not going to happen again.
But that was against the best team they've played this season with him being the alpha dog. Who's three times?
Pick your greatest UNLV player of all time. They're gonna, if you look through every one of their games, Larry Johnson, he's going to have one where he was terrible. He's going to have one that makes no sense.
Larry Johnson is the best player in school
history. Yeah, and he's going to have some games that make no sense. It's one basketball game.
CK secured Houston wouldn't even have been the guy at the end of the bench waving the towel on the Larry Johnson teams.
Well, the difference with Houston is he is – it's not just the numbers. It's the mindset because he's on record dozens and dozens of times saying, I don't want to be the go-to guy. I don't see myself as a scorer. I'm not trying to take over the offense. I'm not trying to assert myself. I just want to play basketball and help wherever I can, which is fine. Like, that's a great sentiment. I mean, you want guys who are unselfish, but not that unselfish. Like, that you need him to be selfish. And so that's when you combine his statements with the three shot attempts. That's what sort of kicks you in. That's what makes you believe that, well, maybe he doesn't have that in him to be like the number one go-to guy.
That's a very level-headed, smart, educated response. Case, the problem with UNLV, and I love Marvin, he's built a team around 15 role players.
All I'm saying is things change a lot as the season goes. We go from a month ago saying this guy's going to be the best player on the team to now, oh, he's hurt, doesn't matter, makes no difference. That's the argument you're making to me. That is absolutely insane. And overreacting to a couple games, that is number one. What do we do? Get on here. Don't overreact to a game. We all know that. That's exactly what you're doing.
We have to overreact.
It means something that this guy is hurt. I'm sorry. It means something. It doesn't matter that he shot three times in one game.
UNLV lost a role player from its interior, and now they got to go with some guy, Joel, whatever. God bless him. He doesn't have enough reps playing basketball. He passes the ball. If you and me can touch each other, I'm touching you right now. That's how he passes the ball.
If he was a role player and shot three times, it wouldn't even be a storyline. He's clearly not a role player. You're just lying. You're just making things up now.
You're right. UNLV's best player is out for the year, and he's going to be replaced by a guy who isn't as good as him. And you know what? It could be a disaster. It is a disaster.
It's just harder for me to believe they win the tournament. That's all. I'm not saying a disaster. Yeah. It's just a harder. I thought they would have a better chance to win, to make a crazy run in the tournament with him than without him. And that's really what you're hoping for now if you're trying to get to the tournament. But we've done enough arguing about Shakur Houston and the Rebels.
Moment here.
No, because you're going to say something that's going to make me go crazy again.
Hey.
The name on the front of the jersey. How does this work? It's only a condition when you said it because we haven't seen it work for UNLV for 8 straight years or something like that.
Does Scarlet and Gray have some momentum? Big Shot Noah hit a big shot to save them from a gigantic embarrassment loss when they were up 17. They're going to the islands. They're going to get a dub against Hawaii. And who knows what could happen. Maybe they come back here and all systems are a go for January 3 when the league play starts.
January 2, but yes.
Same thing. January 2. Somewhere in the world, when that ball tips, it'll be January 3. And that's what I got my clock set to.
All right, so ending on a positive, a guaranteed victory against Hawaii. You heard it from Ray Brewer.
I'm already.
Who also guaranteed victories over Loyola and Valpo as well. But before we get done.
In the last 10 years, they've lost to some real dogs, haven't they? Southern Utah, NAU.
I think those losses are probably worse than these two.
Howard. Valpo.
All right, well, before we sign off, we wanted to briefly mention football. It's signing day. I know in the past it's been one of your favorite days of the year, Brewer, and it seems like Tony Sanchez has a good class coming in, I believe. What's signing day? Thursday? Tuesday?
Thursday. Okay. Thursday, yeah. UNLV's got like 16-ish players, give or take,
yeah,
depending on your math.
Big class.
Few three stars, depending on which site you use. 24/7 has them with, I think, 9 3 stars, including a player I wrote about Friday, a 3-star recruit who had offers from Ole Miss, Boise, TCU, and Baylor. He picked UNLV. A pretty cool story about how at a high school the Rebels recruited him. Somehow Tony Sanchez in his iCloud saved a photo of them together and sent it to the kid, and it meant a lot. Tony winning the battles. It's a big get for them. And the kid plays a defender, which you could never, if you're UNLV, you can never have too many defenders. And the class, Grimal, I don't know if you've looked at it, but a lot of JC kids. You know, Tony's all in right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's on notice.
On on notice and all in, baby.
Yeah, I mean, Desiree Reed-Francois kind of made that explicit. She said, you're on notice. Make the make a bowl game or you're gone. So it's
if you're not in the New Mexico Bowl next year, Tony, you're done.
So, yeah, big class. A lot of three-star guys. Best class Sanchez has brought in so far. A lot of defensive guys. Some junior college guys who should be able to play right away. That's a big thing. So, yeah, I mean, this might be – I mean – I'm going to feel stupid, you know, thinking back on this when the season actually starts, but UNLV defense could actually be better next year. They might actually have some
players.
Could
be better
than
the offense.
They might have some players.
You know, could be better than the offense.
I think all things considered, they were a little bit better on defense this year than last year, were they not?
Jericho Flowers,
to me, was their best player in the last 4 weeks of the season.
They made progress on defense for sure, but they had that one stretch in the middle of the year when they just gave up 50 points, you know, for
New
a
Mexico
month straight.
Game is just,
It was a month of 50-point games, and then they couldn't stop San Jose State. And so, I mean, there was some progress, but there were also times when you could tell that was a UNLV defense out there. So get some more bodies, get, you know, a three-star outside linebacker. You know, that maybe you can patch some holes, and they bring back a lot of their core guys.
You got to get somebody for Armwani to throw the ball. Right, he showed some progress there in that Reno game, throwing the ball downfield. His wheels will be fully with air when the season starts. Don't know who's going to run the rock. I don't know if Charles Williams is a guy or not. Armani's got to have somebody that can stretch the field.
They do have a commitment from a highly ranked junior college receiver. So if he makes it the signing day, then maybe that's a guy who helps your receiving core. I agree with you. They need help at receiver. They weren't very good there last year.
Yeah. Have I talked to you about my JC theories at all? Do we have time?
This is a famous Rebel Room back, but it was before Grimala's time, probably like 2011 or 12.
Let me give you a story. There's this kid. His name's Tyler Dobbins. I love this guy. He was the quarterback of Basic High School in 09. Basic went to the state semis. They were like a field goal away from playing Gorman for the state game. Like, the Grimala, it missed by this much. So Tyler Dobbins, good kid. He's going to like.
How is this going to turn into throwing shade on Tyler Dobbins?
Just, can you just listen?
I know where it's going. I love Tyler Dobbins.
I love the kid. He's great. I've known Tyler.
You're about to insult him.
No,
okay,
I know.
Ahead.
I've known Tyler since he was that big. I know his family real well. So his cousin is this kid named Kyle Keplinger. Pretty good high school wide receiver. Kid goes to a JC in the Seattle area, and then he transfers to Victor Valley. It's like a week before the season starts. Victor Valley doesn't have a quarterback. Does anybody know a quarterback? Keplinger's like, my cousin is a quarterback. They're like, go drive and pick him up. Not 15 gets the kid. I-15. Back, next thing you know, he's starting for Victor Valley. He's like 22 years old. He's got a few extra LBSs. Throws for like 4,000 yards. 4,000 yards in his one semester of college football. So I'm just, there's the Cam Newtons of the world. And then there's, I just don't know what to trust on these numbers. Some kids are in JC because they're not big enough and they get bigger. Some kids are there because they're blossoming. Some kids are there because they don't qualify academically. And when I hear a JC kid, I'm hoping it's Cam Newton and not Tyler Dobbins. Well, I love the kid. He's my guy.
I feel like the disconnect, though, is I think you're putting too much into these numbers. Like, I don't think when college coaches go to JCs to find their recruits, I don't think they particularly care that Tyler threw for 5,000 yards or whatever, saying, like, he didn't come out of that and get a bunch of offers to go play. I mean, there's different levels here. I mean, like you said, the guys are there for all different reasons. If this story turned out like he ended up going to getting a scholarship to New Mexico State and threw 80 interceptions, I think you'd have more of a point. But you know what I'm saying? I just there's different levels, like you said, and the stats aren't ultimately what's going to decide who you pluck out of a JC.
I agree. Here's the deal. UNLV needs some help. These guys are going to allegedly, hopefully, help them out. The schedule's not great next year, right? At Vandy, at Northwestern, Ark State here.
It could be a little more difficult, but
lower level team, and they're with Boise and CSU. Even though CSU's a disaster right now, but Boise obviously is going to be good.
Yeah, I don't think the schedule's too suffocating.
Who's the team they play here that's not good?
They probably play some FCS team, right?
Yeah, who is it? Is it SCU this year?
We can look it up. I just remember, I mean, I don't think the schedule is, it's by no means, they do play Southern Utah. They open up them on August 31st. But, I mean, there's some games they can win here. If these guys turn out, this could be a bowl team. Again, I think that it looks like Tony has done what he needed to do. I know I only went to one game, and yet I heard him say multiple times a season, towards the end of the season, we've just got to get some defensive guys in here. He mentioned that. That needs to be done through recruiting. And certainly on paper, it at least looks like they have a chance to have done that. The guy you were mentioning that you wrote a story about, Vic Viramontes. I don't know how you say his name, but check it out on LasVegasSun.com. And I'm sure we'll have more coverage. I just think it's big to see some of these headliners as defenders, because we know that's what they need more than all.
I agree.
Yeah, they got the new defensive coordinator who looked like he was doing a pretty good job with what he had to work with, which, quite frankly, was not a very talented defensive side.
Your leading tackler was Dalton Baker, who was essentially a walk-on.
So give him some players and some, you know, three-star JUCO kids and see if he can actually coach him up, and maybe he can.
And if he can't, they'll find somebody
else. Brand new coaching staff next year.
Alrighty.
All right, well, that was the Rebel Room for Ray and Mike. I'm Case. Happy holidays, and thanks for listening. We'll be back probably at the beginning of league play to discuss this transitional year now for the Rebels. Thanks for listening.